You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limits. Go to GameSense.ab.ca.
Jordan joins us once again. Ty, how you doing?
I'm doing good. 49 minutes till first pitch, roughly somewhere around there. It's coming up pretty quick, though. I'm pretty nervous.
Well, it should be a good game. The Jays, the one thing they've shown is they belong. I don't think anyone can argue that the Jays don't belong in this series. It's far from over. Probably the two best pitchers for the Dodgers are going to take the mound tonight and on Friday. And the Jays got two of their really good pitchers too. So that's what makes the series so good. What I'm interested in is I really feel the Jays offense has been better. Like, yeah, you got Ohtani and he had his monster game. But other than that, the Dodgers, up and down their lineup, there's Teoscar Hernandez and Ohtani, and then after that, it's a major drop-off.
Oh, big time. And, you know, this was a thing, too, against Seattle. Not to the same degree, but against Seattle, like, the 79 hitters on the Mariners did basically nothing that entire series. And you compare it to Jimenez in the ALCS with two massive home runs, everything Ernie Clement's done for this ball club throughout the entire playoff run. IKF has had clutch hits. And then you go to the World Series where, again, it hasn't been total zeros for the Dodgers lower towards their lineup, but Andy Páez has done basically nothing. Kike Hernandez has missed on a lot of really clutch opportunities for them. So it's not the 7-8-9 that the Mariners were, but the 8-9 spots for the Dodgers have been insanely quiet. Then even a guy like Mookie Betts, who's batting 250 now in the playoffs, like, he hits right after Ohtani. And I know the two home runs Ohtani hit in game three were huge. There were also a couple opportunities where he was getting on base with leadoff doubles or doubles early in innings, and Betts wasn't able to cash him in. So I'm a little surprised Dave Roberts has stuck with that configuration. But again, the Jays 1-9. Even yesterday, Ty France comes off the bench, grinds for an at-bat. It was only a ground out to second base, but he put the ball in play and it scored a run. Like, they just have these grinder at-bats, and it's so tough for these Dodgers pitchers to get into a rhythm.
I look at, well, the thing about if you did switch up your lineup, like, who are you going to switch? Like, I guess you move Teoscar Hernandez up, but it's not like anybody else is hitting great.
Yeah, I think Will Smith's been the one, even though he went 0-4 last game, he's at least had some pop and some power. I thought maybe they would take a chance at moving Will Smith up, maybe going Ohtani, Freeman, Smith or something like that. But I guess for Dave Roberts, it's also a little bit of just go with what got you here and hope that the averages kind of change up a little bit. Like, Mookie Betts at the end of the day is still going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, the chances of him being cold this entire series are probably pretty slim. So Dodgers are just going to keep rolling with it. For the Jays, you're going to need another unexpected hero, because no George Springer again tonight. I know you talked about it. Davis Schneider getting the call to be the leadoff hitter. Like, that's a big spot to put a guy in who hasn't started yet in this World Series.
Yeah, no, that's totally valid. I'm fun. It's looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun, as I think most of our listeners are as well. The Orders, they did not have a good start to the game, but the second period and beyond, they were the better team. I don't think there's much debate on that. 5-on-5, they scored 5 goals. They got 3 empty net goals this year. They haven't missed many shots on the empty net, so that's an improvement on their empty net finishing. But the lines where you have, you know, Nugent Hopkins, McDavid, Mangiapane, is Mangiapane or Nugent Hopkins one of them? Just which one do you think is the placeholder when Hyman comes back?
I think it might be Andrew Mangiapane. Just looking at the way the rest of the lineup is going as well, I kind of like that Ike Howard, Adam Henrique duo. I got a piece coming up at OilersNation.com where I looked into things a little bit. And when Henrique is on the ice without Howard, the Oilers are getting outscored. When Howard's on the ice without Henrique, the Oilers are getting outscored. But when they're together, they're outscoring the other team 2-1. And some of the fancy numbers maybe aren't all that encouraging with those two, but I kind of like the idea of Howard and Henrique having the third line and maybe just giving them some time to develop a little bit of chemistry. Maybe it can be like a lowercase version of Derek Roy and Nail Yakupov from way back in the day, the veteran centerman and the young winger who just loves to shoot pucks. So I kind of like that duo there, which means if Henrique can handle 3C, maybe you can keep Nuge up at the top left wing spot with McDavid. And then, yeah, when Hyman's back, I would knock Mangiapane down and see if you can get something going with him, maybe even on that third line, maybe with Leon Draisaitl, and add up Hyman right back next to McDavid when he's ready.
Yeah, well, yeah, and we know he's not going to be ready this Saturday or for the road trip. So earliest will be the following Saturday against the Colorado Avalanche. So then Mangiapane, see, because I'm kind of torn. Nugent Hopkins is playing very well. I still think he's a better winger than he is a center iceman. I like him better as a center iceman than I do a winger. Now, playing with McDavid's a little bit different, but for 3 years, he's never produced a ton five-on-five long-term with McDavid, so I guess it's possible it could change. But to me, I think the team might be better if he's your third-line center.
I think if you were to ask me that question, you know, on the eve of their first playoff game or something like that, I'd probably have a different answer. But for right now, with the Oilers' five-on-five scoring being what it is, granted, six even strength goals yesterday, five of them were five on five. Like, that is a very, very encouraging sign for this team and this offense. But with the scoring being what it is over the first 11 games of the season, I'm totally okay in the moment. Ride the hot hand. Nuge is above a point per game. I'm fine keeping him there. And, you know, the line combos we're talking about now, they're going to be different 3 weeks from now, 3 months from now. Like, they're going to keep changing as guys kind of go through the ebbs and flows of a regular season. But for now, I like riding the hot hand with RNH.
Regula. Ty Emerson played pretty well last night, but when Regula's ready, and I know he's getting close, do you think that, how much of a competition is that going to be between him and Emerson?
I mean, Ty Emerson's picking a great time to sort of get his game in order here. I think the last couple of games he's been really good, and like you said, yesterday might have been his best game of the season. So if he kind of hears the footsteps coming and he's turning on and finding another level, like, competition is a great thing for any team, right? If everyone's kind of got to be on their toes and they know that, hey, if I have a bad game, I could be out of the lineup for the next one, that's good. So if Emerson's going to keep delivering, again, I am riding the hot hand. That would be my philosophy from game one till game 82. I kind of wonder a little bit about Troy Stetcher as well. Like, is there a chance that they try to sneak him through waivers earlier in the season when teams aren't going through injury issues? Like, the thing with Stetcher has always been, well, he's the nurse whisperer, right? You can put him next to Darnell Nurse and he calms him down and they give you good results. But so far this season, the two of them haven't had good results. And I know it's a small-ish sample size. They played about 60 minutes together at 5-on-5. But they've gotten absolutely caved in those 60 minutes. And I kind of look at it and go, if Stetcher's not going to be your nurse whisperer, like, why are you keeping him around? He's a bit more veteran, but does that come with limited upside? Do Regula and Emerson, are they maybe worth keeping around and not risking losing one of those guys? Not that they would waive Ty Emerson, obviously, but I don't know. I kind of think you can run with a seven that is Emerson and Regula. Maybe it's Stetcher that becomes the true odd man out going forward.
Oh, I don't even think it's a discussion, to be honest. I think it's a no-brainer that it's Troy Stetcher. Like, it's okay. They're not at all going to risk Regula over Stetcher. Age, size, mobility, everything else. Like, hey, Troy Stetcher's had a really good career for himself, and you know he might get claimed on waivers by someone. But I know people have texted, hey, maybe they trade for him. You only have seven draft picks. A team's not going to give you up one of their draft picks for Troy Stetcher at this point. It's just not going to happen. But I think when Regula is activated and it's getting closer, I think then, because if they activate Regula, that gives them a 23rd person, on the roster. And so they could get away with it because they only have 22. So they could carry eight. But, you know, Knobloch's already on record as saying he doesn't want eight defensemen. It feels like your eight defenseman will never play. So, I think it's going to be Troy Stetcher. And then when Hyman comes back, you could, depending on the health of Janmark and Kapanen, well, Kapanen for sure will be out, you could move them to LTIR and move a guy down. I still think it might be Ike Howard, right? That's probably the guy I would do. Is there another four that you would send down before him?
I mean, there's been a little bit of trade conversation around Janmark when he's healthy, but I don't think that happens until he's probably played a few games. Like, I don't think another team's just going to look at Janmark before he's played a game and like, yeah, sure, we'll give you some form, or even we'll take on the 1.45. So I could see a world where it's Ike Howard going down. Like, again, I'm encouraged with how him and Adam Henrik have looked for the last little bit here, but I also think that's a guy, and there was a really interesting conversation that Johnny Lazarus and Colby Cohen had on Morning Cup of Hockey a few weeks ago, where it was like, hey, if you think a guy's ceiling is a bottom six player, even if he's young, keep him in your bottom six. Keep playing him. That's the conversation with Noah Philp. Like, keep playing that guy and give him reps in the bottom six. Let him grow into his role. If you think a guy's ceiling is a top six winger, then you need to keep him in the American League until he's ready 100%. To be a top six winger for you. You got to give him 20 minutes. You got to give him puck touches. Like, that's probably something that isn't helping Ike Howard right now. Is sure, he looks good in his little flashes, but what if that guy could touch the puck three times as much in an American Hockey League game? Like, how much more could he be developing? So I totally see the case for sending down Ike Howard if it gets to that point. Give him until January. And then again, I always laugh. We speculate about, oh, the roster crunch that's coming 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, and then someone else gets hurt, and these problems usually just find a way to sort themselves out. So, yeah, why risk losing someone on waivers? Why trade someone if you don't have to when there's that move with Ike Howard sitting there? That also comes with the upside of properly developing a future top six winger. Like, he hasn't been so bad over the last, you know, 2 weeks that I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous and it's a detriment to him and he's hurting the team. Like, he's totally fine. I just wonder if long-term picture, long-term view for the player's sake, if he wouldn't be better off getting 2 months of heavy ice time and power play time in Bakersfield.
Oh, I don't, honestly, to me, I think it's an easy decision. I like Ike Howard. Sending him down to the minors isn't, like, look at Matt Savoy. It's not going to hurt him. Like, I could look around the league and look at how many players have done it. And the long, to me, the order is like, is Ike Howard's minutes difference-making minutes? No, they're not. And that's not a knock on him, because very few rookies, well, almost no rookies are difference makers, because the ones that are good on teams, those teams stink. So I look at Ike Howard and say, hey, what's your long-term plan? If your long-term plan is to develop a top six winger, then get him down there and play a lot. And who knows, maybe it's 30 games, maybe it's 40 games, maybe it's the rest of the year, and then it's next season for him. But Ike Howard is more of long-term. Well, I know they're trying to win this year. Ike Howard's development is definitely more than just this year, and I think that matters more than this season for him.
Yeah, well, let me throw another name your way quickly, because Ike Howard, just looking yesterday at 5-on-5, he played 837. David Tomasik played 919. He doesn't need waivers to go down either. Do you think there's a world where they keep Ike Howard up in the top nine, and once Hyman's back, Tomasik's not getting that power play time? Could they just say, hey, we're going to put Tomasik in Bakersfield for a month and see what happens?
I wouldn't do it. Older guy. Different style of player. I think Tomasik's style, like, he can play in your bottom six, I think, better. And that might, that, you know, I don't think he has top six potential in the future, whereas Ike Howard does. And so I want to develop the top six guy.
Yeah, and I think that's ultimately where I come out as well. And Tomasik, they seem somewhat comfortable playing him down the middle and on the wing. So I'm a big fan of positional versatility. Hey, this goes back to the Jays. Look at how many guys they can rip around the diamond and play 3-4 positions. So if you have a guy like Tomasik who you can go, you know what, if we need him in a pinch on the power play, he can play there. If we need him in a pinch on the wing for a shift with McDavid, we'll put him there. If we need him at center, we'll put him there. Like, that versatility, I think, gives him the edge on top of the development factor.
Ty, enjoy the game tonight, buddy. What's happening in Game 5?
I don't know how to feel about Game 5, but there is just something in me that says they will not lose Game 6. I know it's Yamamoto. I know he's got the back-to-back complete games, and he looks so good right now. But I feel it somewhere in me as a Jays fan. They will not lose Game 6. It's either going 7 or they're winning it in 6. I feel it.
All right, buddy. We shall see. Should be a lot of fun. Enjoy the game.
Thanks. You too.